Welcome to episode 141 of Not a Real Job, a podcast that's all about podcasting and trying to figure out what to podcast about. I think this episode, it's our last episode. Big news, everyone. We're shutting it down. I haven't told Chris about this yet, so we may have to talk about it. But I thought maybe to finally get some listeners, I thought maybe we could go a little dramatic and announce that the show's ending.
Well, I do declare that is quite the vociferous announcement.
I wish that hadn't happened. I don't like that part of it. I don't like this part of the show.
Mr. Joel Kelly, it is hot as heck here in the biggest of the apples, New York City.
Okay, so you've also prepared a bit.
The air is thick, I tell you. Okay, thick. Good. It's like you better know how to swim if you're going to leave the sweet tea behind on the porch, you know?
Tell me, how is the... What advice do I want to get from a Southern gentleman sweating in New York? Tell me about... How do you feel about Bitcoin?
I never heard of no Bitcoin since I was tall as a sprig of an apple tree.
All right.
I'm going to stop this.
Yeah,
now.
That could have been better, probably.
It could have been anything. Joel, it's like 90 degrees here.
See, I was just on a call with someone in Pennsylvania, and that's what she said, too.
2 weeks ago, it was, I swear to goodness, like 45 or 50, and the temperature has since doubled from that, which is a real issue, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I certainly don't want to suggest that I want it to be 90 degrees here. I don't want it to be 90 degrees anywhere, ever. That's too many degrees. Everyone knows that. Yeah. But it's 45 here and cloudy. So, I mean, a couple more degrees would be, I'd take a few off the top from you.
I talked to someone in Montreal today and they said the same thing.
That it's...
And you said you talked to, that it was 45 degrees.
Oh,
and now
I see.
I'm here in New York and someone in Pennsylvania said that. Do you think... All of Canada is 45 today, and all of America is 90 today.
That's the crazy thing, is there's no way for us to know. Can't disprove it.
Well, I would say, you know, from the evidence that I have, it seems true.
From the evidence that I have, 100% of men are tall, bald, portly gentlemen. I just ran a sample, and that appears to be the case. So, yeah, I think checks out. Checks out. I need to loudly open a can of club soda.
Okay.
So if you could just not make any noise during that so we get a real clean. I think, is this what people come to the podcast for?
Our great Foley art? Yes. Yes, of course they do.
But this is going to sound so refreshing, Christopher, because you're dying. You're dying to heat there. So just, I mean, listen to this.
Oh, wow.
It's
how exciting.
That was pretty good. Yeah, I'm glad. I'm glad you enjoyed that. I enjoyed that. That's probably my favorite part of the show. Christopher,
yes. Joel,
we have a list of things that we could talk about.
Great. I don't know where it is. Oh, here it is.
I've got it up. Okay. I'm just gonna fire questions at you. We're gonna rapid fire months worth of episode prompts.
So when you said in the email to Lindsay, I hope we don't go through all of these at once.
Right.
What you meant was, I am going to make sure that we go through all of these at once.
Well, you know. Language is fluid. Nobody means what they say anymore. We live in a post-truth society, and I think I'm doing my part.
Okay, sure.
Well, we have to talk about my broken phone too.
Oh,
that's still broken.
Yeah. So but tell what
it continues to break in more interesting ways.
Okay.
Now, sometimes when I touch the top left of the screen turns off.
Huh.
Is that a feature?
Joel, I think we've said this before, or I've said this before. It always surprises me when people complain about their iPhones, because I've had my iPhone SE now for, you know, since it came out, and really, it's still great.
How many times have you dropped it on the pavement?
Well, none.
Well,
so,
that's your problem.
Well, no, I mean, I think that's your problem.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I see. So this is my fault now.
I think it always was.
Huh.
Not just now.
Well, that's one way to look at it. I've always kind of thought that I, you know, I exist really on the whim of the gods. And whatever happens kind of just happens. And if my phone falls out of my shirt pocket onto the pavement because I put it in a pocket that is, you know, easily exposed to the world, you know, I mean, I think that's more of that's a problem for someone higher up than me. I think that's all I'm going to say.
The that big JC?
Out of my hands. It's up to the big JC, the big J-Hove, the big Zeus, the big what are all the good ones?
All the popular gods.
Mm-hmm. I've been playing a lot of God of War. So I have a lot of Norse gods in my head right now. Couldn't name one if I, you know, let's say a Thor and a Zeus. I got some Norse people in
my head. What about a Cthulgr?
I think that you mean Cthulhu.
No.
And yeah.
Maybe I mean Thregali?
And that's a Lovecraftian thing. You're just making up words now.
Yes, I am. You got me.
So I think I'm going to get the...
gotcha journalism.
I think I'm going to get the 10.
Okay.
And then maybe get another new one in the fall. I guess that's the tough thing. Because it's 6 months. So we're 6 months from the 10 coming out. And we're 6 months from the new phones. It's the exact worst time to be buying a phone. Actually, it's probably not the worst time. But it's ever worsening. Every day I delay getting this phone replaced, I am making a worse and worse decision to get a new phone at all. I guess that's where I'm at. And I feel like I'm stalling, trying to figure out, do I get the 8... and not love it as much as I would love the 10 because it's less expensive. And I think, as you know, the more things cost, the more I enjoy them. And then what do I do in the fall? Just let other people get new phones and go another year without me also getting the new phone in the fall? I don't understand why you're not here with me, Christopher. All of this makes perfect sense to me.
I mean, you are definitely buying at the wrong time.
Mm.
You're really screwing the pooch on this one.
So what is your useful practical advice to take this situation and turn it into something valuable for me?
Suck it up until October or whatever.
Oof. But can you not hear the noise it makes?
I can hear it. It's loud. Again, more good Foley art.
All right, well.
Can you buy an old used one that still works okay?
You imagine buying something used? Imagine.
Oh God.
I absolutely should. And I, you know, this will last until the fall. It just, you know, it's kind of like what we said last week, Christopher. If we're not buying new gadgets, what are we doing this for?
Is that what we said last week?
That's what I said last week.
I don't know if I was there last
2 weeks
week.
Ago. We didn't have an episode last week. I think I mean the last episode.
Okay. Just making sure that I didn't miss the recording.
How do you find balance between overworking and burning yourself out?
So we're going to the prompts.
How do you balance? Yeah.
Here's how I balance it. I balance it by not balancing it and just constantly overworking and burning myself out.
Okay. I'm going to write that we used this prompt in episode 141, but Chris's answer wasn't very good.
Okay. Just so we know for the future that we could revisit it.
Very good. So we can probably use it again next week.
Great. Joel. We'll just keep asking that question until one of us nails it. Yeah.
You ask me next week and maybe we'll get it that time.
Okay.
I feel like I might get it on the first try.
Yeah.
Have you done, like, that is something, because I mean, you and I have talked personally about this, but I had an interesting few weeks of complete emotional and mental breakdown. So the idea of not burning oneself out or really not taking care of oneself mentally, I think, is something that I have you know, on the brain a fair bit. I will say that, you know, I've gotten much more into video games as a way to de-stress over the past few months than I had before. I think I was normally the type of person that I would get into like one good video game a year and then just play that for a bit. But now I'm like playing the new games more and trying to get through them. And as a way of when I do find, downtime or when I need to not think about work, I've been finding that super useful. A good friend of mine actually sent me a video of some guys talking about playing Bloodborne, a very hard RPG, to help with their kind of depression and anxiety. And I found that really interesting. What do you think about video games as a way to exercise self-care?
Yeah, I mean, I think whatever works for you, right? Like, I truthfully, like, I will play a video game for a couple of weeks and get bored of it. Mm-hmm. And this is why I've really wanted a Switch since it came out, but I know myself, and I know that in 6 months I'm not going to be using it. So I've kind of resisted for that reason, although I'll probably bite the bullet at some point anyway. Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of it. I think the important thing, the big takeaway, is to leave yourself the space to do that kind of thing. Like, if you're so busy that you just don't have the time, or like you get to the end of the day and you're so exhausted that you just want to go right to bed, like, that's the fundamental issue. Like, right, like, the solution isn't that you're playing video games, it's that you've given yourself the space in your schedule to do that, to make that disconnect. And so if you're someone who's like super busy and constantly working, you don't have the time to do that, then that's not good. And of course, to a degree, like, the actual act of like playing the video game and letting out that stress is helpful too, but I think it's more about the fact you have the space to do that. And I heard an interesting Dan Sullivan quote yesterday, where this was on, I think, the 10X Talk podcast, and someone had asked him, where, you know, why do you think people these days are so overwhelmed and feeling so overworked? And I'm going to butcher it, but what he said was that, in his view, that's because we live in a time where people have too many obligations without buy-in, right? And so he had said it in a much more eloquent way, but basically the idea is that we have too much that we're being asked to do that we don't really think is important, or that we don't want to be doing, and it's doing tasks that you don't want to do that leads to that feeling of overwhelm. If you're bought into something, if you're like working on something that you really believe in, and the task is something that you enjoy doing, that you excel at doing, that energizes you, then you're good. Then you can basically do that to a degree. Obviously, it's everything in degrees, but you can do that pretty much indefinitely. The problem is that there's just too many things that we have to do from day to day that we just don't like doing, that suck the energy out, because it's like, I'm not doing the things that I want to be doing. And so I think a big part of that then is figuring out, what are those things and how can you not have to do those things? And that directly contributes to you being happier, because you're working on things you enjoy doing. And it also leaves you space in your life to do other things that you enjoy, like video games, that may not have a direct, you know, output on your business, but they, you know, you have that extra space to kind of mess around and do what you want with your time. I think that's super valuable.
Yeah, that's a huge one. David Allen talks about this, and kind of on the getting things done area. David Baker talks about this kind of on the running your own company entrepreneurship side of, if it's something you're not doing, but it's bothering you, is it possible you just shouldn't worry about doing it? Like, is it something that is just doesn't need to be done by you at all? Take it off your list if it's something that you don't care about and doesn't matter. Obviously, there are some obligations that have to get done and we have to make sure they're done. But as you say, it doesn't necessarily mean that we have to do them. But we put a lot of things on our lists that obligate us, even if only to ourselves, that we might not actually care that much about. David Baker talks about, like, go through your goals and decide which of your goals that you set when you were in your early 20s don't matter to you anymore, but you're still holding yourself to. Whether that's a career goal you set when you just graduated university and now you're 40 and haven't become that person you wanted then, may not want to be that person anymore, but you're still holding yourself to an old goal that doesn't matter anymore. I think there's a lot of those things where we commit ourselves, whether mentally or financially, to things that we don't care all that much about, and then stress and become overwhelmed by these obligations that we probably never needed in the first place.
Yeah, for sure. I think obviously there are a bunch of different variations on this, and the advice is all kind of the same, like, do the stuff you want to do and don't, you know, find someone else to do the stuff that you don't want to do, but still needs to get done. I think it's also important to be really,
or at the very least, like what are those things that you don't want to do that still need to get done that are working towards something that matters to you, and at least try to consider that angle of it. I certainly found myself for the projects I don't want to do but need to get done anyway, of just considering that there is an end. This is a means to an end, and it's a shitty means that I have to do right now, but there's something at the end of it. But if you have too many tasks that have no actually appreciable goal or kind of benefit, then you're kind of fucked.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, I think the key point, one of the key points too, is that sometimes it's hard to tell what those tasks are because of biases that we have or opinions that we've generated over the years, or, you know, like if it's a deliverable for a client, like it's, this is just how the industry does it. It always works this way, blah, blah, blah. And, it's just important to be constantly kind of challenging your assumptions about what matters and what doesn't matter, because otherwise you're going to end up doing stuff that not only do you not want to do, but doesn't actually matter to anyone.
Yeah.
And I think this is also something where it comes to clients. We both work with clients. I think a lot of the times, and this is tricky, of course, because you're dealing with other companies or other people. A lot of the times, like, the things that clients ask you to do or ask of you, they don't particularly need either. And this can be really – this is incredibly tricky, but, like, sometimes – like if somebody asks for like a particular deliverable and you're like, why do you need that? It's important to kind of, if you can, if you're in a position with your client, try to figure out why they're asking for that. Maybe it's that their boss expects a certain deliverable in a certain way. Maybe it's that that's just how things have always been done at their company or their organization. And so it's just really important to like constantly challenge those assumptions for yourself, but also don't be afraid to ask clients, like, why do you need this?
Mm-hmm.
There are definitely cases where we've done things or we've gotten requests from clients where, we'll go back to them and say, this doesn't make sense. What if we do this? Or what if we, and take a different approach? And then we're not responsible for doing something that no one wants to do. They're not getting something that they don't particularly need or they don't, they're not actually going to use. I don't know, all this to say, like, I think to go back to the original subject of like how to keep yourself from overworking, it's like, I think there are two fundamental things: do the things that matter and divide the work evenly, and make sure you don't have too much of it. Make sure that you can leave, really like 40% of your time, like in a week, maybe even 50% should really not be on work.
Yeah.
And that's not even like, I'm not just talking like 8-hour days or like, all that kind of stuff. I'm like talking the mental load as well. Like leaving yourself space for things that are unrelated from work, I think is, even as an entrepreneur, I think is really important.
It's one of those things that's so obviously true and so obviously beneficial.
But it doesn't make it any easier.
And the unrelenting, I think, feeling of guilt that a lot of people in our position of running our own businesses, managing clients who have expectations and maybe their own ideas about workload. The unrelenting feeling of guilt anytime you're not working as a business owner. I don't know. I think it's something I've struggled with. I'm sure it's something that our listeners do too.
Yeah. And there are ways to solve this problem. Now, granted, I have not done this successfully yet, but
tried drinking for most of my career and that worked until it didn't.
Yeah. So, something that we've done on the Tomodomo website, and it's the Tomodomo website needs a lot of work, but, there is a page on there where we talk about our values. And one of the values is that, like, we don't work overtime, we don't work weekends, all this kind of stuff. Now, of course, that's like, it's a page on a website that I don't think anyone has ever visited. But like, in sales, a lot of the time, if you're doing consultative sales, like one of the ideas is like you really want to arrive at the solution with your client as opposed to saying this is what we're going to do and this is how we're going to do it. You want to kind of work together to come to that solution and really give them the feeling of ownership that they've contributed to creating the solution. I think it's really similar, and I think you should do the same thing. And again, I say this not having done it, about your business's values. And if one of your values is that, like, we don't work weekends, or, you know, we're not going to work past 5 p.m. or, you know, whatever it is, like, however you articulate that, you know, we don't answer email, you know, from Friday to Monday, whatever it is, mm-hmm. however you mm-hmm. define those limits, it's really important to have that conversation with your client. So you aren't getting that angry email on Saturday afternoon. Why didn't you respond to my email last night? This is critical. You really have to set those expectations up front, have it written down, have it in a place where everybody can refer back to it, have it, give it its own call. This, you know, we talk so much about, like, you know, you and I don't talk, but, like, you'll have a call, you'll start working with a client, you'll have the discovery call, and in the discovery call, like, you lay out the deliverables and you lay out a schedule, you know, or a kickoff call, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
You lay out all this kind of stuff, but it's so rare, in my experience anyway, in the calls that I've been on, there's never a point where we say, all right, now that we've kind of talked about what we're doing, let's talk about how it's going to, what the experience will be of working with us.
Yeah.
Not just how we're going to accomplish this task, but, like, what is it like? What are the expectations? When, how quickly can you expect email turnaround? How quickly do we need email turnaround from you? When is it okay to give us a call or not? You know, all that kind of stuff, all those ground rules, especially if you could phrase it in a way that's like, you know, we just want our team to be as fresh as possible so we can, you know, work as hard as we can for you. And, you know, we want you guys to feel like you're able to, you know, not have all these expectations on you for, you know, commenting on deliverables and things like that. Just having all of that out in the open, I think, is incredibly valuable. And it's something that I don't think many people do. Like, I certainly don't. I think a lot of the times in service businesses like ours, like where you're working and consulting with clients, like you said, like, we want to, there's the perception that you need to bend over backwards to keep the client happy. And that's certainly, like, to a degree, yes, you want a happy client, but you also want a client who's aligned with you in terms of the way that you work. And so I think getting all that stuff out in the open is, like, not even on the kickoff call, like, before that, like, this should come up during your discovery period. This should come up in your sales calls. This is how we work. This is why we work that way. This is why it's so important to us. And make sure that the client's aligned with that, because if not, like, you're just creating that same problem for yourself, and you're going to end up getting those angry emails about deliverables and, you know, on the weekend, or like, why aren't you responding? And it's going to create all kinds of stress, and no one wants that. And then you end up overwhelmed and burned out and asking yourself how to get out of that cycle again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that makes perfect sense. And that's a really interesting idea. Yeah. The kickoff call of, we always focus on, you know, here is the milestones. This is when you'll get this. This is, you know, when we'll need feedback. But yeah, we almost never, and again, yeah, we as creative entrepreneurs, et cetera, don't talk about what is the, I guess, the culture or the work attitude of our company. I think that's really interesting. And I think that's something that I want to start incorporating into our discussions.
Clients. You know, I think, like, as boutique agencies, boutique consultancies, where we're working with a relatively small number of customers,
mm-hmm.
Our values are really one of the big pillars that can set us apart from another agency. So I think, you know, and obviously, like, you know, culture and values, all these kind of buzzwords can become meaningless pretty quickly. But, like, as an owner, as the owner, as a principal of your business, like, you created your business, like, values are implicitly part of that. So why not be explicit about them? Why not, you know, instead of, like, making them these assumptions or not even, like, things that you're sort of aware of on the periphery but have never really sat down to think about, go through the exercise of, like, writing down what are the values that you have in your company? How do you want to work? And I don't mean, like, what are the software you're going to use? Like, all that kind of stuff. That doesn't matter. I mean, it does, but it doesn't really matter. You know, what kind of work-life balance do you want to have? And be deliberate about it. Be explicit about it. Like, lay it out on your website, make it clear, and then make sure that clients are on board with it too. Because if they're not, that's when the problem starts. That's when you feel like you said, like, you feel this guilt, like, you're not working hard enough, you're not working fast enough. But if everybody's on the same page about the expectations, if everybody agrees that this is how it's going to work and we don't email on weekends and, you know, all this kind of stuff, then there's nothing to feel guilty about. Everyone agreed to it. Everyone's happy with it. So I think that's you know, again, I say this all having not done it myself, but it's something that I know is important. And I know, like, going forward is going to be essential to the way that we do business.
Yeah, I think that makes perfect sense. And just to clarify, I mean, even around that feeling of guilt, I think you and I understand this, but just to clarify, it's not about, you know, not meeting the obligations to the client. Like, obviously the work is getting done, but it's that feeling of there's always more. There's always more that could be done. There's always more time that one could spend. And I think in the agency consultancy community, I think it can be very easy to slip into one path, which is if there's more time that can be spent, it should be spent, versus you know, realizing that that unworked time is valuable for its own sake, and can be more beneficial to you and your client if you are not always working. But I think that's easy to forget, especially because, you know, agencies, huge generic blanket statement, you know, are pretty terrible at this sort of thing almost universally. You know, I've worked at a lot of agencies, and I think the one thing all of them have in common is that, you know, clients have very different expectations on their agency's time versus their own, or versus their other employees. Again, huge generalization, but I think that can be difficult. So if you start a business in that sector, there's kind of an implicit expectation that you're going to behave the same way. And having that conversation up front and about why your business is better and more interesting because you don't do that is important.
Yes. Agreed completely.
Well,
great.
There we go. We did a topic and everything.
Let's then, now that we did that, let's not let this all go to waste. Let's get your money. If you're happy that we actually did an episode that was probably pretty good for once, you can help us out by buying something from our Amazon store.
You know, this show is really made in the edit, so I don't know how it's going to be end, but we'll find out.
Well, I mean, if it's made in the edit, we've got the best editor in the business, Steve, so it'll be great. This is the part of the show where we recommend stuff that we've recently bought on Amazon.com. Well, recently, or you're in the past, we've recommended some old stuff recently, too. If you go to the show notes, which are at notarealjob.com, in those show notes, click through. You're going to see links to these products with our Amazon affiliate code on there. If you buy through the link, if you buy with our affiliate link, we're going to get like a fraction of a percent of that, which is small, but, you know, it means a lot. And truthfully, we just like talking about stuff. So that said, Joel, what have you got for us this week?
I have been going through my old Amazon orders here. Got a lot of DVDs from way back in the day. You know, really had to lock down Prometheus on Blu-ray when that came out. That was important. But let me see here. Something that's actually good. You know what? This is kind of a silly thing, but I really love it. And it's the kind of thing that I'm sure everyone's heard from all of their friends who have multi-tools and like them. You've probably heard people go
on. You've heard of multi-tools.
You've heard of multi-tools, and you've heard about how fun they are to play with and use and how useful they can be to kind of have around. So I'm just going to recommend, I have a Leatherman new wave multi-tool. I keep it on my desk. It gets used, I don't know, maybe once a day, several times a week, at least, for either cutting open packaging or you know, using the tiny little scissors for things. It's just fun to have around and useful for camping as well, if you're into that, which I didn't go camping at all last year, which is crazy. I think that was the first year in many, many years that I hadn't gone camping. So this year when we go, I will be bringing the Leatherman multi-tool. So that is going in the show notes. Christopher?
Great. Awesome. I'm going to recommend a book. So this is a book by a friend of mine, Dan Andrews, who is also a client. He's the co-host of the Tropical MBA podcast, or I think they're just going by TMBA now, founder of the Dynamite Circle Entrepreneur Networking Group. And Dan and his business partner, Ian, used to run a business where they did manufacturing. So they manufactured most famously valet podiums and portable bars. That was their niche, basically folding industrial furniture. And then they sold their business for a tidy sum, and then more recently wrote a book about it. So Dan wrote the book. It's called Before the Exit, Thought Experiments for Entrepreneurs. It's pretty short. I read it in about an hour and a half on my flight when I was coming back from Tokyo. It's really good. It sort of talks through their experience of selling their business, but also like some questions you could ask yourself if you're in the, you know, if you're ever thinking of selling your business. They've got some interesting opinions on that and some questions you can ask yourself to decide whether it's really the right thing to do or you're just avoiding something. So it's $2.99. If you got Kindle Unlimited, it's free. It's, I think, only on Kindle. But it's a good little read.
What's it called again?
It's called Before the Exit, Thought Experiments for Entrepreneurs. And it's a good little book. It's pretty quick to read. Dan's a cool guy and a really smart guy, really thoughtful guy. And I think if you're interested in selling a business at any point in your future, this is definitely worth picking up a copy and reading it.
I think I'm going to have to get this because this is something they've talked on Two Bob's a fair bit about is, you know, selling your company. And one of the things Blair believes is that if you make your company sellable, you'll end up making enough money from that business and enjoying it that that's what you'll end up probably wanting to do. And then, of course, David has helped dozens of people sell their agencies. And he said virtually none of them have been happy about it. At the end.
Yeah, and I don't think I'm spoiling anything here to say that like Dan and Ian, you know, I've had a chance to talk to them a couple times. They've talked about this on their podcast since selling the business. They are still confident that it was the right thing to do, but they definitely have a lot of regrets about it.
Yeah, totally. It's not near as simple as I think people dream it to be.
Yeah, even like the process of selling sounds arduous. It's you know, it took them, I think, a couple years really to go through all the process and different buyers. And of course, you have to have, you know, exclusive deals with the buyers to review all your financials. And it's just like a whole operation.
And you're running a business while
exactly
all of this is
at
happening.
The same time. Yeah. And trying not to shake things up. And so it's, you know, it's a whole thing. And so, yeah, so it's really interesting and definitely worth a read.
Awesome. Well, everyone can find everything on the internet at notarealjob.com. Links to all of our socials and gear picks there.
Yes. That's everything. Just cool. The website.
Yeah.
There you go.
AOL keyword Oprah.
There you go.
Okay.
Sounds good. Thanks everyone for listening.
Thanks everyone. So we did a topic this week. We'll probably do a topic next week. And if you have any questions, concerns, thoughts, send them in notarealjob.com.
There you go.
Thanks y'all.
Bye everyone.
Not a Real Job is sponsored by Van Patten Media
and The Family Knife.
Van Patten Media builds websites and web applications for businesses who care about intuitive and effective user experiences. Its sister agency, Tomodomo, does the same, with a focus on online communities and social applications.
And if you want to do more marketing in-house but need the tools, strategies, or support to do it, The Family Knife is the partner you need to build your marketing capabilities and grow your business.
You can find Van Patten Media at vanpattenmedia.com.
And you can find The Family Knife at familyknife.com.
For more information on being a sponsor of Not a Real Job, visit notarealjob.com/sponsorships.